Hello and welcome to this FinStick podcast. FinStick, the Financial Systems Thinking Innovation Center, is a community of IFRA members and non-members dedicated to bringing the benefits of a systems thinking lens to their work. I'm Ashok Gupta, and today I have the pleasure of talking to Chika Agadino, the Group Enterprise and Operational Risk Director of Aviva, and Neil Cantle, Principal of Milliman, to hear how they have applied systems thinking across Aviva to identify emerging risk. Thank you both very much for coming along today. Neil, can you just tell me what you actually mean by emerging risk?
So I think typically emerging risk is understood as something that's evolving, it's new, it's novel, and it's something that hasn't really been fully understood in terms of how it's going to unfold and indeed what the consequences are when it does. So the key thing is it's something important to the firm, even though it's not understood.
So could you give me an example?
So I guess the obvious ones that people talk about a lot, things like cyber, climate risk, things which are multifaceted like that, which could go in many multiple directions, and each of them could be significant to the firm.
And why are the traditional approaches to risk management insufficient in identifying these risks and dealing with them?
So I think historically, a lot of risk management's been quite silo-based. People use linear methodologies to break things down into pieces, focus on one feature at a time and say, what could that do to my organization? And the problem is that the answer is anything. Once that feature interacts with everything else, it could produce a whole range of different outcomes, which is really hard for everyone to understand. So emerging risk is really about getting underneath all of those multiple factors, looking at all of the different features they could lead to, and that is just not what traditional risk management does.
So can you tell me a little bit about the approach that you've used?
So we actually start from a different perspective of trying to work out what things we're interested in terms of the outcome. So every organization has objectives that it's trying to meet, and it has a risk appetite around those things. And so actually the only stories that you're interested in are the ones that touch those key objectives. So our approach is about telling stories that get you from today to one of those important outcomes that you're interested in through the lens of one of these emerging risk narratives. So it's basically storytelling and something which you can learn from.
Chika, can you tell me a little bit about how you've applied this in Aviva?
Yeah, so at Aviva, we would probably not necessarily recognize the phrase systems thinking in the context of our emerging risk framework, but actually hearing Neil talk about it, I can see elements of that are exactly what we are doing. So we do consider a framework around our emerging risk. I personally consider it to be a key part of our risk management framework, but it's difficult. It's difficult to know the sorts of things that you should be looking at and looking for. And often these types of risks are huge and they're really difficult to get to the bottom of and to know what to do without being overwhelmed. So we try and break it down. We try and make a process whereby it becomes easier to manage. So we think of a number of different types of emerging risks. We think about engaging a broad group within the organisation as a source, if you like, to almost crowdsource the emerging risk, I would say. And then we think absolutely in terms of what's the story around that. So what are the potential scenarios that might play out? And more importantly, the impacts and outcomes that flow from that. But interspersed amongst all of that is the underlying risk. So we try and move away from considering these issues as near-term or even if they are longer-term, but singular types of issues, because we just know that things don't play out in that way. They don't operate in isolation. So it's a complexity of risks that will necessarily play out, and we need to understand what those sorts of things might be. So we look at the interconnected risks underlying something across the horizon, and we try and challenge ourselves to understand what might this mean for us at Aviva in terms of both the risks and the opportunities, which is often forgotten about, and also what does that mean if you work backwards in terms of what you might be thinking about and doing from a management action point of view starting from now and what might be the triggers to lead you to do different things and to escalate your activity. So there's a whole wealth of factors that we need to consider, but we try and do that in a structured way that is both mindful, not limiting, also engaging.
Most of us will be familiar with existing frameworks for managing enterprise risk. How would you say your framework for emerging risk is different to traditional frameworks?
Well, I wouldn't pretend to have the insight and overview across, you know, other organisations, but and so I can really only reflect on what we do at Aviva and how it has evolved, because it's not static and we have learned from things we have done which haven't quite played out and we need to tweak it. And some of that, which is good, I think, has come from provocations from our senior leaders and from our board, who clearly do have some input and insight from other organisations. So it's very much iterative and we move on. So I think the difference is this point around not being insular, so not just providing endless information about a particular issue, which is actually very easy to do. And there are some very obvious answers, if you like, once you've landed on, you know, whether it's, you know, cyber or technology or whether it's, you know, climate. There are some obvious things to say about that, and therefore some obvious activities that you can identify that you need to answer. What's much, much harder is to really lift the bonnet and really understand in an almost alternate world how might things play out, how might that interact with various other things. Leave behind your understanding of the world as it is today and really open your mind to explore what that might mean for whatever your organisation is and the different areas within that organisation, to try and unpick the flow of scenarios that could ensue and therefore the sorts of things that you might need to deal with and therefore act.
I'd like to come back to that in a second to get an example, but Neil, you've had experience of other traditional frameworks and the one you've applied in Aviva. How would you see the differences?
I think the key thing, as Chika said, is that in a classic framework, you tend to pick a theme and then explore it, and it makes you think quite narrowly. So if you took some of the ones that people over the years would have come up with, like geopolitical instability, nanotechnology, solar flares, all these kind of things, people throw that into a workshop and say, what could it do? And the key being, what could it do? And the answer is, well, not a lot or too much. It's impossible to say, because in the real world, as Chika described, it interacts with many other things. So I think that's the big, big mistake in a traditional framework, is just focusing too much on each item on its own. And what Aviva's done is actually put those into a pot and actually saying, well, together, if I look at that parallel universe, what do they all do together? And that's a crucially big difference.
So could you give me an example, Chika, of a risk that's now managed differently as a result?
Yes, although I'm going to cheat a little bit and talk more generally first, but I then will be more specific. So more generally, the traditional approach that we have used is to think about, say, climate change. There's a lot of research which we pull together. We have a lot of people across many disciplines within our organisation who are doing, you know, fantastic work, but it's all very isolated. And I have found and observed that our board, for example, they get bamboozled by the different lots of activity that is happening, all very good activity, and also what they should then doesn't present itself on the plate. It's not a coherent story. So that's at one end of the spectrum of a very, very, I would say, complicated, long-term type of risk. Although interestingly, as well as being a very long-term sort of risk, it also has absolute near-term implications. And that's one thing that we're all very clear on, and our board is very clear on. Regardless of how this plays out, it's impacting us as of now. So that's an interesting one in that regard. But on the other extreme, you have more kind of tactical types of risks. So they might be in the political vein, for example, where we know there is going to be an event or something that's happening in the next few months, or it's, you know, we're amongst it now, but you still need to think in the same sorts of ways. So what we have done is to overlay the thinking with a sense of what are the trends, what are the mega trends, if you like, that we know of. Let's challenge some of those. What is the conventional thinking? But let's change that. And then let's mix these things together as well as the specific topic that you're talking about. So if you think about climate, there are some ongoing important trends for certainly us as an insurer that we presume to be a given. So whether it's about aging, whether it's about the length of life, technology, all of those sorts of things, there are perceived wisdom that these sorts of things are playing out in a certain fashion. You might have differences of views in terms of the extremes or the timing around these things, but there is a perceived wisdom as to how these certain things might play out. Now, if you think about all of those issues, challenge some of them in terms of whether they stop, they reverse, what the combination of some of those things might be, and then you consider that through the lens of climate. You might think, well, that's a lot to take on board, but actually, you start challenging yourself and asking different questions, more questions than you might have if you were just considering climate change.
That's fascinating. So can you give me an example of how some of these other factors in the work you've done, how some of these other factors have flowed through and contributed to your thinking on climate change, which you wouldn't naturally link otherwise?
Yeah, so one good example, I suppose, is generated by conversations that I've had and others have had with organisations that are different to ours. And I think that's also an important factor here. So what's your source in all of this? If you are just considering very good information that's put out by other insurers and the big reinsurers, there are some fantastic thought pieces that come out. That will give you some valuable input, but actually having a conversation with Tesco, the Army, the Metropolitan Police, that will also give you quite a different angle, but you would be surprised, certainly I was, as to how relevant that might be. So the Army, I only discovered, owns 2% of the land in the UK. They are massive asset owners. So they have a perspective when it comes to climate, as we do. We are also asset owners, not in that regard, but they have different thoughts and thinkings and concerns, which triggers us to think about things slightly differently as well. If you talk to a retailer, you could argue that we also are a retailer. So that sort of thinking about our customers, how do we want to make the world better for our customers in the context of, you know, this catastrophe, this emergency, climate emergency that's unfurling, there are similar sorts of questions that Tesco are asking of themselves, and any other supermarket would also be relevant. They are asking of themselves and about their customers that's relevant to us as well.
And can you give an example of an insight relating to climate change that you've gained from these sort of conversations?
Yeah, so I think the bigger insights come not so much about the risk, but maybe the opportunities. So when I think about the propositions, and that's something we're constantly trying to explore more, that could result as a result of some of these really troubling scenarios that we're playing out, that there are some nuggets that can make you feel a little bit more positive in terms of the role that we can play, frankly, with our customers, but also how we can perhaps even mitigate and help our customers, and sounds a bit grandiose, but society at large. So if I think about currently some of the things that we do that play into the climate change space, if a car is damaged, you can think about making sure that you make defaults, climate-friendly defaults, whether it's your car, your house, your fridge, for example. Is it, an environmentally friendly fridge, or the most high-spec fridges that we routinely replace products with? Really simple, but fairly obvious. Recent conversations I've had has led me to think about taking that to another level. So alternative energy sources, which I think are little spoken about, hydrogen, for example. I don't personally read too much about that, but actually there is a whole set of innovation out there, which I think might be upon us soon. And some of our white products, in the future might be fueled by that sort of energy source. And as I understand it, that it's actually possible to start making these things, some of our products, hydrogen ready. So wouldn't it be great if we think about us as an insurer linking up with that sort of thinking, that sort of technology, as we know things are going to change. We can't predict clearly exactly how things are going to play out, but we can start thinking in those ways, and actually we can start advocating in some of those ways.
And Neil, in sticking with climate change, were the things that emerged from this that insights that stood out for you?
I think for me, it's around some of the things Chika picked up on around people. So a lot of the systems thinking that you do with these sort of scenarios is actually picking up how people react in those situations, because a lot of the rest of it's quite logical, it's quite obvious, but then people react in a slightly illogical way sometimes. And I think the ability of big firms to nudge people in a climate scenario to actually sort of, in quotes, do the right thing, I think that's quite a powerful insight to take from something which feels like it's a risk and a negative, but then actually to flip it and say, well, if we change our product slightly or we change our communication slightly, we could actually nudge big chunks of the population to do the right thing. I think for me, that's a really big positive that comes from considering these kind of emerging risks.
So can you give me an example of that?
Well, I think the product example was a good one. You know, you might start off with a rubbish fridge and suddenly find you've got an eco-friendly fridge. I mean, that's a great step forward. That's one fridge less that's killing the planet. And I think all of those sort of little decisions, they add up, they snowball. People get used to buying green. People get used to doing those right things. It just becomes normal. But they would have never done it if they hadn't have been nudged by a big retailer or a manufacturer.
So moving to a different type of risk, pandemics. Coronavirus is something that's very topical at the moment and concerning us all. So how would you take the approach that you've been using within Aviva? Are there lessons for us from that in thinking about coronavirus?
So I think we've done a lot of pandemic type modelling over the years. It's a sort of topical risk that people like to think about from time to time. And again, for me, the big aha about that is how people react to it. So obviously there's a sickness and a death angle to it, which is in a way sort of understandable. You know, there's a medical angle, but then there's a how do you behave? And that's just a perception of, should I be scared about traveling to certain places? Should I be worried about interacting in certain big social areas? And that's a behavior based on perception. Coronavirus isn't currently impacting me right now, but I might well modify how I behave just because it's out there. And I think you could see that with air travel, the way airports worked, people get scared when they're in big places. So all of those kind of second order things are really quite interesting when you look at pandemic type risk, just beyond the obvious medical emergency itself.
And is there a risk that people modify behaviour and in doing so exacerbate other risks?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you could see it through previous things when we had sort of bovine incidents and all those sorts of things. You know, people's behaviours were not entirely logical. They stopped going to work. They stopped going to school. They were interacting in very different ways than you might think was reasonable. And actually, the medical emergency was pretty well managed. It was the perception of the general population, which was slightly odd in some cases.
And you referred earlier to the storytelling. And are you able to, from the storytelling, identify these behavioural type tendencies and build that into the work you're doing?
Absolutely. So I personally think it's always good in a workshop when you're considering emerging risk, have some people who've seen some slightly unusual films. Those sort of plots that play out in these sort of bizarre films, sometimes they're quite inspiring. You say, well, what happens if? And there's some storyline that they've seen in a movie which is plausible, but not entirely what you would have seen in your day-to-day life. And that kind of sort of jumps of imagination often can really spark a great line of thought, which then makes a great scenario.
A criticism often made of risk experts is that we're always fighting the last crisis. How would this approach help you to fight the next crisis rather than the last one?
So I think that the trick is to learn lessons from the past, but slightly abstract them. So don't be too precise and too literal. And then when you're telling a future story, obviously it's a new story. It's a different universe that you're describing. So I think if I go back to the whole range of scenarios that Aviva did, you know, they're all novel, unique, interesting. And of course they build upon insights, you know, and control frameworks and things that were from the past. But everything is novel and forward-looking. How could this happen in the future? So I think trying not to tell a very prescriptive story about something like what happened before is the key. Just throw that one in the bin, capture the lessons, but then tell a new story about something that could happen in the future. And that keeps you fresh. you're constantly challenging and saying, if this sort of situation happened, how would our organization react? Would we see it coming? What sort of controls do we have? What sort of flexibility would we have to capture that opportunity? And I think that keeps it fresh and forward looking rather than just another sort of disaster recovery sort of scenario or another mortality explosion. So it's always looking forwards, never backwards.
Chika, how did this approach go down in Aviva? Did people respond well to it?
Yeah, so we've definitely been on a journey, and there have been, I would say, multiple positive feedback and benefits I've observed over the past couple of years. I start at the very top, so in terms of our board and the engagement that we've had with the board on these subjects. And the papers, frankly, have always stood out from the kind of regular dry papers, not just in terms of content, but we make efforts to make them look different. So shorter, more visual, and they generally good conversations. But then elsewhere, I personally found it a really useful tool to have good conversations across the organisation. So for those that don't work in risk and wouldn't necessarily relate to risk and the risk function, it's been a really great way of getting them interested in risk and taking these big headline types of issues and flipping it to say, well, what does this mean to us? To the point that we now get people offering topics that they stumbled across and said, wouldn't it be great if we understood what this means for not just for Aviva, but our function or our particular area of the organisation? So we get this kind of two-way interaction on these sorts of issues, which I think is brilliant, because one thing that I've always been keen to say is that risks of our organisation are not the domain of the risk function. So until and unless we have the whole organisation thinking about risk, then we're never really going to be able to properly manage our risk.
And this feels very much more to me like an evolving fluid framework. It's not something where you do a piece of work here today and a piece of work tomorrow, which are disconnected.
Correct, absolutely. And that is something that we challenge ourselves and the board challenges us. Much as they like the papers that we present, much as they like the conversations that they have, the very important question is, and so what? And what's happening next? What's the point of this exercise? What are the actions that are going to flow as a result of all of this? And that's where we are constantly looking to make sure that there is a so what, making sure that we identify the bits of the business that need to respond in some way to this, making sure we identify what the milestones or the trigger points might be where we dial up or dial down the risk, making sure that we allocate particular risks to particular management committees, for example, so that they have that on their agenda and routinely come back to it. All of these things need to happen in order to make sure that we haven't just done an interesting bit of work and then leave it for something else.
Does that lead to a far more fluid risk appetite? And does it change the shape of your ORSA?
Not necessarily. I think it makes for a better understanding of your risk profile. I think it acknowledges the fact that it's going to be more than the things that you absolutely know about. So yes and no. So yes, you need to be open to and agile to these risks, because none of them are static. The extent to which you capture that quantitatively is clearly challenging, and you're never going to have all of it, and certainly not in terms of identified unknown risks, because almost by definition that's a challenge. But I think it leads you to have a more holistic view of your risk, which does need to be captured within that balance.
And does it feed into Solvency II or into the information you present to analysts differently?
Ultimately, yes, because we consider emerging risk to be fundamental to our overarching risk framework. So we do talk in broad terms about emerging risks, and our understanding of those risks has to be part of the confidence that you have in the way an organisation is managing itself, and that we would relay to stakeholders, be they shareholders or analysts or the regulators. So ultimately, yes.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Chika, and thank you, Neil. That's fascinating. If you're interested in joining the FinStick community, reading case studies or listening to our podcasts or participating in our events, please visit www.actuaries.org.uk/finstic. Thank you.